here's the beautiful thing about it. You can develop an internal motivation. You can develop an internal drive.
Winning habits, winning routines, and a winning mindset.
You're the main character of your own life story.
Welcome to the Susan Sly Project, where entrepreneurs rule, startups launch, and the side hustle becomes the main hustle. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Susan Sly.
So my guest today has a motto: everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And this woman went from never boxing to entering a competition, becoming a professional boxer, and then starting a business, building an entrepreneurial empire during COVID, and has one of the top podcasts, not just in Australia, but rising in the world. And I love her. Oh my gosh. She is my sister from another mister and the host of Rolling with the Punches, the one and only amazing. I feel like I need the bell for the boxing ring. Tiffany Cook.
My new podcasting soul sister, Susan, how are you? So good to see you again. Thank you. What an intro.
Oh, well, thank you. It's so good to be with you. And thank you for having me on your show. And if the listeners haven't heard Tiffany's show, where she interviews me, now I'm going to turn the tables and we got so raw and real, and this is about raw and real entrepreneurship. We're just going to pick it up. And so there's no holding back, and we're going to dive in. So first and foremost, my first question for you is, right now, there's a lot of uncertainty going on in the world. The Delta variant is going on. I was watching CNBC this morning, and they were saying that Southwest is finding a lot of people are canceling flights. I got a message from someone on Neil Patel's team. There was an event. They've decided to postpone the event in Austin because of the Delta variant. Last year during COVID, everything shutting down, you decide to launch a podcast when you had never podcasted in your freaking life, sister. And my first question out of the gate is, what advice do you want to give to people right now who are scared?
Control your controllables and do something that you wouldn't normally do, because that's the first thing I looked at and the first thing I did, and like, wow, look where it has gotten me. You know, crazy. The first thing I did when the pandemic hit last year, I'd already answered a really important question. 2 years prior, I had entered into a business partnership, and for me, it was a big step. It was a bricks and mortar business in partnership with three other people, and I felt like the risk versus reward for me was stronger, was higher risk than for them. So they're already very well established in other businesses. And I thought to myself, or I asked myself, if this doesn't go the way you want it to, if this falls to a very low point, then will you get enough out of the experience to make that worthwhile? Either knowledge, or will it change your life enough for you to move on to bigger and better things? Is this something you want? So I answered that question. So when COVID hit and my two gyms that had not yet made a profit in those 2 years got shut down and my income got stopped, I went, oh, well, I've answered that question, and this wasn't, like, it's not my choice how things happen, but I've answered the question, so I can't complain about that. And I thought to myself, first thing I'll do, I'll pretend that I'm on 2 weeks holidays. It's summer. It's March. Sit in my courtyard. I went outside. I laid on the sun lounge, and I thought, I'm going to imagine I'm in Thailand at one of my boxing retreats. I'm at the resort, and I'm just going to kind of visualize that. And then I thought, I never give myself a holiday. So how great is that? I thought, I can't control any of the macro. I cannot control whether business goes bankrupt. I cannot control if I lose my assets. I cannot control any of that. I cannot have any certainty about what this pandemic means, but I can have a great 2 weeks and figure something out. And it was powerful, like, because from that place, I don't know, I felt better than I'd ever felt. And I then focused on, I guess, focused my time on the things that I would, what can I gain? So I put finance and money and all of that to the back of my mind. And I thought, what are the things I can work on that I can't lose in these really uncertain times? What are the things that I've always pushed to the side that are really important to me? And opportunities came up and that were crazy in themselves. Opportunities came up for things that I felt that I'd asked for, but in ways that I never expected. For example, working with the Ambulance Victoria paramedics, there was a position created for me in the pandemic. And, you know, a few weeks prior to that, I was looking for this exact position in this style of a business. So, you know, those things all came together. And, yeah, I mean, these are lessons for me, those small shifts of don't focus on that, focus on this. When great stuff happened from that, I have to always, and it's continuous, I have to always remind, when I reach a new normal, because even in the middle of this pandemic that in itself is not normal, you reach a new normal fairly quickly, you reach a new routine, but I always remind myself, hey, are you leaning back to a place that was TIFF pre-pandemic? Like, let's keep TIFF mid-pandemic. Let's keep this new TIFF because look at how amazing the results were. But it's really easy to just slide back into the old habits, old mindsets, old ways. Does that make sense?
Dang, girl. TIFF pre-pandemic. Like, thinking about there are some people who are still mourning their lives pre-pandemic as we head into a new surge. And I call it the sorority pandemic because after Delta, it's Epsilon. And then, you know, we're going to go Gamma. Like, it'll just, we'll go through all the Greek alphabet. And it's sad and it's tragic. But as you said, it's about controlling the controllables. And it's the decision. It's the decision to say that who I was can be no more because the world has changed. And if I don't change in a changing world, then shame on me, not on the world. How did you get the courage to do that? And for people who don't know, you know, you've been punched in the face many times legally, right? Like, you know, because you wanted to be, not because someone did it to you. But tell everyone your story about how you discovered boxing, because to have the strength you have, I know, just getting to know you as I have, that was such a pivotal moment into this new TIFF, this post-pandemic, post-current pandemic, pre-next pandemic TIFF. Tell everyone how that happened.
Yeah, so I was working, I grew up in Tasmania. It was a small state off the bottom of Australia. So very quiet little country town. And I moved over to Melbourne when I was about 20. And I worked in corporate because I fell into corporate after school. I fell into working in the print industry. I was in sales. I was always business to business. I did a lot of networking. That was just where I went. It was never a passion, but I found my passion within that place. However, one day, because of some people I'd met through networking, I remember actually someone come over from the States. I was a part of this networking group called BNI, so it's Business Networking International. It's all around the world. And somebody had come from the States and he'd visited our group. And we caught up and learned about each other's business. And I remember him saying to me, he was staying at this hotel that was right near a gym. And he said, there's this talk on this week that I think you would really love. It's about mental resilience. You should go. So I went. And it was Paul Taylor, who has been a guest on my podcast. Paul Taylor, he's a former British Navy aircrew officer. And he's a neuroscientist, he's a nutritionist, he's studying psychology at the moment. Like, he's just he calls himself a pracademic. He's an academic, pracademic, does it, studies it, knows it, like, amazing. And so I'd never been exposed to this type of, you know, mental resilience training or even really physical training, to be honest, at that time. So I was 29. And I went to this course and I learned all this stuff and I was like, wow. And then we went downstairs and we looked at this gym, and the gym was Acumodum. It was very forward thinking for its time. It was, you know, AstroTurf and barefoot training and TRX and body weight movements and very different to most gyms that you walk into. And then downstairs from there was the basement boxing gym, and we walk downstairs and there's this big poster on the wall with two corporate dudes wearing suits with shiny red boxing gloves on, pretty much saying, "Zero to hero, we'll teach you to box, we'll teach you to fight, you get in the ring, 12 weeks, anyone can do it." And I just went, "Ooh, can girls do this?" That was my in, you know. So I decided, I was a bit of an attention seeker. I liked to do things that weren't typical that girls do. I liked to do, I think it was my way of, this was pre-boxing TIFF, there's been pre-pandemic TIFF, there's been pre-boxing TIFF, there's been so many TIFFs over time, and I can't wait to see which ones roll out in years to come. But that pre-boxing TIFF was, yeah, a bit of someone that liked to do things that made me stand out, and very much often things that weren't typical for girls either. And I think it was my yearning to scream out that I was different, and to be different, to be significant, to be special, to be seen. And so I put my hand up for this boxing challenge. Never boxed before, to be honest. It's quite ludicrous to think that I would. Anyway, and then because I was, you know, a bit of a chatty Cathy, I told everybody that would listen that they had to buy these tickets to this boxing event. It was a professional boxing fight. I was going to be fighting at a black tie event. There's going to be 1,000 people there. It's going to be filmed and it's going to go live on Foxtel. It's going to be on television. All of the bells and whistles. You get registered as a professional fighter. It's the real deal. So it was super exciting. I told everybody and sold everybody tickets. And then it was like maybe 2 or 3 weeks into training, and we start doing the, you know, kind of learn how to do defense, learn some of this whole boxing thing that we're going to be doing in a few weeks' time. And I remember not being able to keep my eyes open and not being able to control my reaction to somebody just floating their glove out towards my face whilst I learned the movement of catching it. So it wasn't even a real punch yet. It was just, you know, the motions. And it was so confronting, Susan. I had a knot in my throat and I was just waiting. In my head, I was in a chaos. I was like, the minute this class finishes, I'm going to go and sit in my car and I'm going to cry my eyes out. This is so terrifying. What am I going to do? What am I supposed to tell everyone? Can't even keep my eyes open and no one's even punching me yet. So that was like the 12 weeks was that. The 12 weeks was uncomfortable, confronting. There was a constant stream of dialogue from that little inner critic that often, and I think everyone's got one or has experienced it at times at least, of that little voice on your shoulder going, you are the worst person at this. This is so embarrassing. What are you even doing here? Everybody thinks that you're a joke the whole time. And then just turning up anyway. And then changing the way that I socialize. You know, I go out for dinner and you don't have a glass of red with your steak because you've got to train for a fight, and fighters don't drink alcohol when they're in a training camp. So there was this complete switch of everything I did. And then I stepped into the ring and it was terrifying. It was terrifying the night before. I didn't sleep. So I'm fighting the next night on 1 hour's sleep, just with adrenaline that had coursed through my body for a 24-hour period. I couldn't communicate properly. I'd never felt anything like it before in my life. I'd never put myself in a position like that. And I said several times to several people that day, I will never, ever, ever do anything like this again. There's nothing in the world that could possibly be worth what I feel right now. And I meant it. I get when I tell people this again, every time I get goosebumps because I meant that. There's nothing. $1 million, any feeling, nothing. Anyway, we hop in. The whole world is watching and I jump in the ring and the music's on and punches are flying everywhere and some are landing on me and I don't know what's happening. And then next minute my hand's in the air and the fight was over. And I remember first question I asked was, when's the next one? like the feeling of having done it anyway, the feeling of not even necessarily the win was great, but the feeling of having done something despite those feelings of not wanting to and come out the other side. I had never known a feeling so awful as the feeling before. I definitely never knew a feeling, that feeling of accomplishment coming out the other side, and that, I mean, that feeling, but also the first few like pennies that dropped in how that related to life changed me, changed how I approach life. It changed the tiff. There was post-boxing tiff was born.
And I love what you were speaking about being confronted, right? And when we think about that, the confrontational nature of business and feeling like an imposter, and one of the conversations you and I have had is when I first came into the technology world, I didn't have a computer science degree. I hadn't coded anything. This was 2018, at the end of 2018. I hadn't coded a line of code since 1991 or 92, a long time ago. And there I was, and it was me and all men. And I kept, it was that voice, my friend Matthew Ferry, I've got a great interview with him. He calls it the drunk monkey. And there was that drunk monkey on my shoulder saying, who do you think you are? You didn't go to Carnegie Mellon. You don't have a computer science degree. You're barely learning the difference between a GPU and a CPU. And, you know, what are you doing here? And it was this daily battle, looking at myself in the mirror and going, damn it, you deserve to be here. You've earned the right to be here. They brought you in to help raise money. You helped them raise millions of dollars. That's what your entry card was into this arena. And now you're here and you have to learn it. And I love what you said about changing everything. I changed my whole life. I had two existing businesses and I rearranged my schedule so I could do more of the artificial intelligence startup, and then going to MIT and doing all of those things. And, you know, one of many things I love about you is having that conversation and saying, you know what, if you're going to make it, you're going to have some changes, you're going to confront all sorts of things that you didn't even think you still had to deal with. And then you have a decision. Do you freaking go forward anyway, or do you contract and give up and have the red wine with your steak? So why didn't you give up? Because we see in business, 50% of people fail by year number five, right? And but you're not a quitter. Why didn't you give up? A lot of people would have.
I feel like I had something to prove, and I had something to prove to me. And look, to be honest, Susan, I don't think at the time I even really knew. I couldn't articulate it. I didn't know what that was. But it started a journey of seriously deep self-discovery. But the first thing I remember standing out in the ring watching the other fights after I'd had my fight, gone and had a shower and popped a little dress on and grabbed a glass of Sauv Blanc and was like, all right, that's over. I got my trophy and I'll frock up now and be a lady, which doesn't happen often. But I remember standing watching, and in my head I just thought, six minutes. That was over in 6 minutes, and I've worked for 12 weeks. That was over in six very brief minutes. And those 6 minutes, nobody, aside from your friends that pat your back and go, yay, nobody really cares. Doesn't make a difference to anyone. Doesn't make a difference to really a lot of life. But for 12 weeks, there was all of that confrontation, all of that discomfort, all of that work, all of that change, sacrifice, hearing you, coming face to face with your inner critic, coming face to face with your demons and your stuff. Mm-hmm. And I went, 6 minutes, that's the key. Like anything in life is 6 minutes. Your 6 minutes has to mean something so profound to you. If it's a business, there'll be this 6 minute moment and there'll be a 12 week slog for anything. There's no just swooning in and landing on your feet without the 12 weeks. And I don't know, for me that was profound. For me that was a game changer, because I was a bit of a fixed mindset kind of swoon in. If I'm good at it, someone will tell me, and if I'm good at it, I'll do it. But if I'm not good at it, well, I won't do it. I'll go find something I'm good at. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. The perspective of time, you know, how long we dedicate to something, right? And the saying, every master was once a disaster, ... including me. So people look at you with, and we're going to talk about this, you know, with your podcast, with your sponsors, with, you know, now it's not just you trying to find guests. It's like people coming to you going, can I be a guest? Can I be a guest? And these are well-known people. And how you do one thing is how you do everything. And the fact that you continue to say, okay, yeah, all right, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to apply myself. And it's, you know, 12 weeks of training, 6 minutes of pain. And then I can, you know, frock up and have my glass of wine and I'm off to the races. And here I go again. The reason I wanted you to share that story is because I want to share in front of thousands of people who are listening to the show, that a way you changed my life and my perspective. So for just to give context for everyone, so this is the third time that Tiffany and I've connected. We were connected through a mutual friend. And I was asking Tiffany about when she started her show, and we're going to talk about this, and what she did, because I want to frame this in by saying that 80%, Jordan Mendoza taught me this, 80% of podcasters haven't done a new show in the last 90 days. And I have a lot of people I know who are like, I'm going to do a podcast, and they'll record like 5 episodes and they never do anymore. That's not what you did. So can you tell everyone, so you have your staycation, it's not Thailand, but you come out of that and you decide you are going to start a podcast. How did you do it? What did you commit to? Because this is something I want everyone to hear, because there is nothing half-arsed. I want to keep my, you know, good PG rating on my show. There's nothing half-arsed about Tiffany Cook. So tell everyone how you did it.
Well, it is, I love it. I love the story because I know where I started. I know my capabilities. I know what I thought of my capabilities. I know exactly where I was. And this was the same with boxing. I got excited. I get excited to train anyone. I get excited to talk about it because I was a nuffy. Like if I can do it and win titles, anyone can do it, right? That this is the moment that boxing changed my whole realization about life, is the fact that everything is coachable, learnable, and teachable, and anyone can do anything should they A, believe in it, and B, just take action. So we're in the middle of the pandemic. I've started working with the Ambulance Victoria. I'd written up a contract so that I was doing online for their wellness hub. We were doing some online coaching. I had some people to do yoga and do Pilates, and I would do the HIIT training. And then I thought, I also I'm a real people person. Let's do a Friday get together. We'll have a cup of tea or a glass of wine and we'll just chat, you know, it will connect, because we don't just always, there'll be some people that maybe they don't want to do the fitness stuff with me, but they still need to connect with people. So Feel Good Friday was born. And after 2 Feel Good Fridays, I asked my best friend who does aromatherapy and beauty therapy. I said, hey, do you want to come on and talk to my paramedics about some self-care stuff they might be able to do at home? And so she came on and taught them. And then all of a sudden I had that, it's kind of sparked that idea, and I went, I've got some good contacts. I'm going to ask them if they'll come on and present to the paramedics. So I had Craig Harper, I had Paul Taylor, I had Bobby Capuccio from LA. I had this whole range of people that I invited in. I had Sandra Pankhurst. She's just people with incredible stories. And I had them present to the paramedics, and I realized that I was learning some skills. I was like, oh, I've never managed a conversation like this. I've never communicated online. This is like a, you know, it's almost podcasty. Maybe if I kept doing these, I'll always have the audio. I'll save the audio, and when I've got 20 of them, I'll start rolling them out once a week. And then in that period of time, I'll I'll start learning how to actually properly do a podcast. That was my thought process. Now, I have a friend who runs a podcasting company and they teach businesses how to podcast. You would think that I would ask her for advice, but actually just I borrowed her podcasting like gear, her little recorder and microphones. And when we came out of one of our lockdowns, I said to one of the guests, can you come to the gym and help me record a couple of episodes? Just want to have a practice and see what I can do. And on, I remember driving to the gym to meet him, and I thought of the name Roll with the Punches, or at that time it was Rolling with the Punches, which I ended up cutting short. And I thought, whoa, that's a really cool and relevant name, obviously for my boxing background, but also because I want to talk about people that have done amazing stuff. Maybe they've got through adversity. I want to look at that whole adversity concept, and also people that are just successful. How are people, you know, getting through this thing we call life? So I thought of that name and it was awesome. And then we get to the gym and I've set up the little table. So there's these professional microphones. I have a gym where Danny Green, who's the world champion boxer, we have a mural of him in the background. So, and I had the ring light, and I've taken this selfie through the ring light because I was excited and it looked really cool. And then I was like, that looks so professional, which that is actually that selfie, funnily enough, is the cover art for my podcast, which is kind of laughable. Anyway, I got so excited about that. So I've been given this 15-minute, here's how you press record and then you record it, and then the audio's from the microphones is in on that little thing. And I was just too excited. So I did a Facebook post to everyone, said this, Roll with the Punches, keep your eyes peeled because there's a new podcast on the block and it's here. And within 2 days I'd figured out, I don't know how, because I'm not very IT. I'm definitely don't have the IT background that you do, miss. But I had figured out how to get the audio onto my computer, how to use audio editing software, use Adobe Audition. I don't even know how I figured all this stuff out. But I figured it out and I made intro music and I got it on to iTunes and everything, and that was it. So the two things I wanted to improve my communication skills, because presenting and speaking and running events was important to me and it's something I'd done for a little while, but I wanted to be better at it. But the other thing was I realised that with the Victorian Ambulance and the network that I'd developed there, I had some leverage to improve my network, to network at a higher level than I already was. And I always valued the people in my network. I look at who surrounds me. I look at who I want to be like and whose energy is good. And I make sure they're the people that are in my circle or in my line of sight. So they were the things I focused on, and it wasn't a plan to, I'm going to have a podcast that's going to have lots of listens. It was, I'm going to self-develop and I'm going to use this platform to do it. Within 7 weeks, I got an email saying, you're number 8 on the charts. And I was like, what charts? What are the charts? What charts? There's charts? Who are you? Who's this person emailing me? And yeah, and I started to learn about numbers and analytics, and it's incredible. So I'm up to 100. It's been over a year now, a year and maybe 1 or 2 months, and I'm up to episode 190. I produce 4 episodes a week, and your episode was pretty amazing.
Thank you. Everyone needs to go listen to it.
Yeah, but within, I guess, the lessons with that, within 3 months, I had learned, I sat back and went, oh, my goodness, I have learned more speaking to these people than I've ever learned doing anything. And mm-hmm. because of the, you know, my passion behind their stories and what I was learning from them was so high. I was like, I just don't think there's a course where I could learn what I'm learning. It's been amazing. And the doors that have opened, you know, and now I am a podcast producer for someone who's been my mentor and kind of what, you know, my business idol for a few years. You know, by October, but I launched it in June. By October, he was ringing my phone saying, hey, I want you to be on my show once or twice a week. And then by the next, you know, by the beginning of the next year, he said, all right, I want you to officially come on board as one of our producers of the show. And, you know, like that, geez, 6-7 months before that, none of this was on the cards. It's just crazy, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you think about what you did, you dove in and then you said, I'm just going to learn it. Right? I'm not afraid to get a little messy. And what was inspiring to me was you said, I am committed to this many shows a week, no matter what. If I've got the sniffles or I'm hungry or I'm having a wall kicking moment, I am doing, tell everyone how many shows, because most people don't get to 200 shows. They don't get to 20 shows. You are at almost 200 shows in a year, but tell everyone what your recording schedule is, because that was what was inspiring to me.
So I record 4 shows a week. So I produce 4 shows a week. I also produce 4 shows on Craig's show a week. So now I'm producing 8 shows a week. And the odd external one here and there for other people's shows. It's just it's my priority because, and in between that, the world opens up. And I still do training. I still work in the boxing gyms and I still do other stuff. But I just, this is so important to me in terms of my development. And I trust in that. I saw every time you start something like boxing or fitness, that's always easy to understand the fitness stuff. Every time you start something, the improvement gains are huge. And it's like weight loss, people that want to lose weight. Oh, it's all exciting when you first start. And it's like, I'm dropping the kilos. And then you plateau and the return diminishes, right? And that's a part of becoming elite at something. So within the first 3 months, I was like, oh, I can hear my own improvement. People are telling me I'm blowing my own socks off, right? That all normalizes. And then 6 months down the track, that's just normal now, right? So I think that's a really important thing to point out to people is what is mind-blowing today will just be normal tomorrow. So you can't always ride on that. There has to be a really strong why behind it. But what it affirmed with me is I trust that, you know, every single episode I learn something, every single episode I improve. When I sit and I co-host and I watch Craig hosting his show and I'm watching two people communicating, I don't just go, oh, I'm just sitting here. I'm watching two people. I'm watching another person that does what I do and I'm going, what can I take out of this? What can I see when I don't have to be in the conversation as much? What can I observe in a way that I can maybe be better at something myself? How is this different to the way I do things? What can I learn out of it? What do I like? What maybe don't I like? And I think that's important.
It's huge. It's huge. And now you have sponsors. I was looking on your website. How many sponsors do you have now for your show?
I've had, that's a good question. I think I've had about 12 or 14. Now that was another thing I thought when I first started, be 12 or 18 months, I might be able to, if it grows in 12 to 18 months, I might be able to get some sponsors. Month number 2, I got my first sponsor and I haven't been without a sponsor since. So I've had normally people sign up for an 8-week period and they'll sponsor a number of episodes per week. There's different levels, but it is, yeah, it's been amazing. You know, and the latest, you know, the last 5 or 6 have approached me. I haven't approached people for sponsorship. They've said, hey, we'd like, what's the package here? How do we get involved? And I just, wow, you know, it's amazing.
It is amazing. And so I'll tell you a story based on our conversation. So between you and Rebecca Zung, right? So so here I was and interviewing Tiffany. And so, you know, if you're new to the show, you don't know the story super quick. So I have 2 businesses. And then in late 2018, I co-found this AI company and we start raising seed capital. And then the next thing you know, we're one of the hottest startups in our market. And then we're getting some national press. And then we sign an enterprise deal with a national retailer. And, you know, it's just in the valuations going up and we're in a, you know, all this stuff is going on. And I feel like, Tiff, I have all these plates in the air. You know, I have kids. I have, you know, my businesses. I have all my employees. I'm growing this company. We're now doing things I have never done in my life, which is like, you know, pitching venture capitalists. I can sell. I've done a lot of selling. It's no different, but it was just like all this different stuff. And I had these VCs looking at me like, why do you have a podcast or why do you do this? I felt more scrutinized as a woman than I think, you know, and I started to research, you know, what other female CEOs have shows or they're posting on Instagram or whatever. And there aren't a lot. And I thought, I have two choices. I can either shrink back and fall into a role that people, you know, that is something people doing it in a way people think I should do it, or I can be a trailblazer. And I was like, of course I'm going to be a trailblazer, right? So what I decided to do after our conversation, so it's all you, I said, you know what, screw it. So I'm, you know, Monday through Friday, I'm the co-CEO of an artificial intelligence company. It's a lot. So what I said to my staff, I said, listen, what I'm going to do every second Saturday, I'm going to go get my hair blown out because I don't like doing my own hair. And I'm going to shoot 3 to 5 YouTube videos at once. And instead of trying to think about what the topic should be, so I use the answer of the public or whatever, I have people write in a video idea. One of them was my dad. I did make him a video. And so I shoot them all and I give them to the team and they add the B-roll and everything. And now my YouTube channel is growing and growing, growing. It's called Raw and Real Entrepreneurship. They're just short soundbite tips for people who are starting businesses, everything from tax planning to, you know, when is it time to hire a VA? You know, all of the things we want to know in business, it's kind of like one-stop shopping and then also interviews. And I was sitting there and I want to publicly acknowledge you in front of, you know, 125 countries and all the people listening, because it was really between you and Rebecca. And I watched Rebecca putting out 5 YouTube videos a week and being a mom and 50 million things going on. And I watched you go, okay, yeah, I'm going to do 4 shows a week and I'm working and I'm consulting and I'm producing. And I was like, you know what? It's so important, this consistency, when that fist is flying at your face, that, or whatever it is, that you, no matter what's coming up, that you continue to go forward anyway, because you know it's what you're supposed to be doing. So thank you, my love. I want to acknowledge you for that.
Oh, that means the world. Thank you so much.
And my hair always looks good in the videos.
I love that. I need to take that on board because I always just pull mine back. Not a fan of doing my hair either. But I love when you just said then, you know, about just forging forward. In my first fight, I remember we were 20 or 30 seconds in and there was this, you know, like body's doing what it's doing, I'm fighting, but then this other part of my brain goes, Tiff, wow, this is a million times harder than anything you've ever done, because you've got this adrenaline in your body, you're performing, you know, at a higher level. So when you've got adrenaline in your body, you're more powerful, you're sharper, you're in your primal zone. So your performance is increased and your capacity is increased. And I remember I reckon it was 20 seconds, it felt like a year. I thought, oh my, I can't keep up this pace. This is ridiculous. I have it like, bah, 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 bah. I got to slow down a bit, throw less, move more. And never a strong point, especially for fight number one. So I remember I thought I'll do, you know, I tried to look and see what was coming and do things that were way out of my capacity at the time. And it was just like, bam, bam, bam. I got punched. Okay, cool. Just keep doing what you're doing. Offense is the best defense. So just keep, you'll learn along the way, but just keep doing what, keep taking the action you were taking, because that will work and refining stuff will come. But if I had have chose to try and refine stuff, well, I'll just refine stuff. And if I'm not good at that, then I'll, you know, I had to stick with what I was good at. And what I was good at was taking action. It was taking action that made me win. It wasn't being talented. I wasn't talented. I was tough and resilient and I had an attitude that was never going to quit. I had good endurance, so I knew that if I could weather the same punches, I knew that for my size, my punches were harder. I knew that my work rate was higher and that I could outwork them. So I might have to wear a few punches. They won't be as hard as the ones I'm throwing, but also These people are going to tire before me. And that's the same in business. Mm-hmm. These people are just going to tire before me. And the refinement will come.
These people are going to tire before me. I love that. Yeah. One of my mentors once said, Susan, you have to out-habit your competition. Right. And it might be the next sales call you make. It might be the next podcast you produce, the next YouTube video, the whatever it is, you know, right now we're pitching Radius to VCs, and it might be the next, we have a lot of VCs interested, but which are the right ones? So it's just, you pitch and you pitch and you go and you go and you go. And then on Sunday, you lie down and you have a nice glass of wine and you go, okay, that was good. Now we'll do it again, right? When Elon Musk was for a moment the wealthiest man in the world, he tweeted, okay, back to work. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Because I think we all think that we're shooting for a destination, and when we get there, we'll rest. But nobody, well, I don't know. I don't want to rest. Resting would be the end of me. I don't want to rest. I want to relish in the places I land, but I want to, you said it. You said it in your podcast with me. Like, your podcast is one that I'll go back to and I'll listen to over and over, because there was gold in that. There was gold. You're incredibly inspiring, but the one thing I remember and I have thought of so many times is you referenced happening to move like a shark, because if a shark stops moving, the shark dies. And oh God, that resonated so much. I was like, I am a shark. I have to keep moving, you know? And it's just being mindful about things. But it's the celebrating the wins is where I needed to pull in and do the work. Hey, don't forget to keep moving, but glide along reminiscing about how far you're going, how far you've come. Same time.
You're so amazing. I can't wait until travel is a thing again. I don't know when that's going to be, but I miss Australia. I haven't been there in several years. And we were just talking before we went, you know, live into recording. I was like, we should do a little series together. And maybe that's what the series is.
I think so. I think so. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I
love it. Do a little video series.
Well, Harvey McKay, who's a friend of mine who wrote Swim with the Sharks or Get Eaten Alive.
Ooh.
Maybe we talk to Harvey and see what we can do with his shark theme. I don't know.
I like that. Hey, let me throw a question at you. I asked this on my socials recently. What do you prefer, big fish in a small pond or small fish in a big pond?
Small fish in a big pond.
That's a girl.
Because when you put a small fish in a big pond, eventually it grows. And, you know, my in-laws, they have this big pond in their backyard. And when my children were little, every spring I'd say, okay, let's go to the pet store and we'll get some little goldfish. And the kids would watch the fish grow and grow and grow. And then in the winter, when the pond froze over, the fish they had dug themselves into the mud. And then the next year they'd be even bigger, because a fish will always grow to the size of its pond.
Yes. I love that. I love that.
So anyway, I know that, you know, girl, we could talk for hours and hours, and I just love you to pieces, and thank you for being in my life. And for everyone listening, and we would love a 5-star review, because we ask for what we want. And if not, Tiffany will hunt you down and you have to box with her.
That's true. I'm coming at you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And please check out our show, Roll with the Punches. And for this show, share it on your social, tag us. Tiffany on Instagram is a great place to reach you as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Instagram, on all the socials, Roll with the Punches, or Tiffany with a double E, Tiffany Cook with a double E.
Yeah. Don't forget the double E, Tiffany Cook with the double E on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook, on LinkedIn. And so with that, Tiffany, thank you so much for being here. You're amazing. And we will definitely catch up at a future show. And with that, thank you everyone for being here. God bless. Go rock your day. And we will see you on a future episode of Raw and Real Entrepreneurship.
To find out more about Susan or hire her to speak, go to www.susansly.com. You can also find Susan on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.